In the grim darkness of the far future, even farms are worlds of endless toil and quiet horror. A sweeping view opens on fields that stretch beyond the horizon, golden crops swaying under a hazy orange sky. It looks almost peaceful, idyllic, even as if one could stroll into that sunset and breathe free rural air. But this image is a lie. These endless fields belong to an agri-world of the Imperium, and the reality of life here is anything but gentle or free. Welcome to the horrifying truth behind the Imperium's farms, where entire planets are sacrificed to feed the galaxy, and where the promise of a simple agrarian life becomes a nightmare of monotony, pollution, and oppression. The Paradise Illusion. For countless billions of Imperial citizens packed into hive cities or crowded manufactorums, the very word agri-world conjures a hopeful fantasy. Imperial propaganda portrays these planets as rustic paradises, wholesome farming worlds with open skies and plenty of room to breathe. Imagery distributed in hive habs shows smiling peasants in sunlit fields, baskets overflowing with produce, and contented families enjoying the fruits of their labor. After all, compared to the smog-choked cityscapes and toxic forge fanes, how bad could a farm planet really be? A bit of honest work under the sun, bucolic ease, as the Administratum's recruitment pamphlets like to phrase it, sounds almost heavenly to those living in squalor. Many impoverished souls have eagerly signed up for work detail on an agri-world, lured by promises of open air and a better life. They board crowded transports, dreaming of blue skies, green fields, and a fresh start. Yet, once they arrive, they find the truth is very different. The transports land and offload thousands of hopeful laborers, and then leave again empty, abandoning the new arrivals to their fate. The idyllic farmstead of the brochures evaporates like a mirage. In its place is an endless industrialized prairie under a harsh sun, where the air stings the lungs and the soil itself seems hostile. By the time the workers realize what they've signed up for, it's too late. They are now indentured labor, trapped on a world that cares only for their output, not their dreams. As the grim joke among agri-world workers goes, you come for the soil and you end up part of it. A world made of farms, an agri-world, officially classified as an A-class world, is not just a countryside province or a farming region. It is an entire planet devoted solely to agriculture, where a hive world dedicates itself to industry and a forge world to manufacturing. An agri-world's one sacred purpose is to produce food. Vast continents are blanketed in orderly grids of crops or sprawling ranch lands for livestock. By Administratum definition, more than 85% of an agri-world's surface must be under cultivation, aquaculture, or livestock use. Forests, mountains, and natural features are few, if any, remain at all. Everything is geared towards maximizing food output for the Imperium's insatiable populations. Why such extreme measures? Necessity. Worlds like this are the breadbasket of humanity. The Imperium of Man counts on its agri-worlds to feed the countless mouths on forge worlds and hive worlds that cannot grow their own food. A single hive city can house tens of billions of people in layered metal warrens, teeming masses who would starve within weeks without constant imports of grain, protein, and water. The Imperial War Machine, too, demands enormous quantities of rations to sustain the Astra Militarum on far-flung battlefronts. Without agri-worlds, the Imperium would collapse in famine and cannibalism. They are literally the difference between life and death for sectors of the galaxy. This makes these farming planets paradoxically both highly important and mostly forgotten. Vital cogs in the great Imperial infrastructure, yet afforded little glory or attention. Constructing a breadbasket. How does one create an entire planet of farms? The Imperium has it down to a ruthless science. The process begins when a suitable world is identified, usually a temperate planet of Earth-like size and gravity, with rich soil or the potential for it. The Adeptus Mechanicus and Administratum have ancient templates for agri-worlds that have barely changed over millennia. Once a candidate world is found, the first step is often brutal, terraforming by force. Any native life forms, alien flora or fauna not immediately useful are exterminated without mercy. Orbiting ships rain down tailored biological agents dubbed virus chewers that dissolve organic matter, or they trigger controlled firestorms to scour continents clean. Native forests, unique alien ecosystems, even entire species are wiped out in months. The Imperium does not care to preserve a planet's original life. It cares only to reshape the world into a human-owned farm. All that matters is a blank slate of fertile earth, ready to sow with Terran crops or approved bioengineered strains. With the slate cleaned, Martian geotech engines move in to reshape climate and soil. Colossal atmosphere processors are set up to regulate the air mix and humidity. Weather becomes something scheduled and managed. Natural patterns are erased. Orbital stations and ground-based climate control nodes seize command of the skies. If rain is needed every third day at 0400 hours, that is exactly when the rain will fall, delivered by seeding drones and geosynchronous satellites. If a region needs more sun, the cloud cover is pulled back on order. Lightning, storms, seasonal variability, all the untamed chaos of nature is subdued by technology. In effect, the planet is placed on life support, its environment now an elaborate machine operated by the Adeptus Mechanicus. The result is a world where nothing is left to chance. Every drop of rain, every ray of sunshine, every breath of wind serves the crop cycle. Even day-night cycles might be tweaked if it could boost yields, with lamps or orbital mirrors extending growing periods. Monoculture on a planetary scale. After these first decades of harsh transformation, the world takes on its new uniform appearance. Huge swathes of land are divided into perfectly rectangular production districts, stretching as far as the eye can see, often flat as a board because mountains have been leveled and valleys filled in. Drive a ground vehicle for thousands of kilometers, and you will see the same scene repeating. Neat rows of crops, or paddocks of livestock, or regimented hydroponic tanks, depending on what the planet produces. It is incredibly efficient and deeply unnatural. Stand in the middle of one of these vast agrozones, and nothing looks unique. It's an endless sea of identical plants, engineered to ripen all at once. You could walk for days in a straight line without encountering a single wild hill or patch of untamed wilderness. Only the occasional irrigation canal or a clusters of storage silos might break the monotony. The soil itself on these worlds is often pushed to its absolute limit. On many agri-worlds, a single growing season is enough to suck the soil dry of nutrients. Under natural conditions, this would spell disaster for next year's harvest. But the Imperium's answer is to dump massive quantities of chemical fertilizer to refresh the fields. After each harvest, fleets of battered cargo landers make ceaseless rounds, spraying nitrates, phosphates, and growth accelerants across the fields in thick clouds. The chemicals are so potent that they stain the very air in lurid colors. Laborers often describe an acrid orange or sickly green haze hanging over the fields after the fertilizer flyers pass. The air in many farm zones becomes toxic. Without a filter mask or rebreather, a worker might faint or suffer lungfuls of caustic fumes. the ground becomes a fragile medium that only produces because it is forcibly medicated, season after season. Beneath the topsoil, pesticides and artificial nutrients create a strange alchemy, leaving behind salty, bitter wasteland if ever cultivation stops. Indeed, over centuries, the relentless regimen of chemicals slowly poisons the environment. Water sources turn foul with runoff from the fields. Broad drainage canals carry away excess fertilizer and pesticide, creating rivers of sludge that can kill any creature foolish enough to drink from them. Native wildlife, if any survived the initial purge, finds no shelter or food in the endless fields and usually dies off or mutates. By imperial reckoning, these are acceptable losses in pursuit of maximum yield. It's often said that the Imperium will use up an agri-world until there's nothing left. This is not hyperbole. The Adeptus Administratum's projections note that a planet can endure millennia of intensive monoculture before finally collapsing. As long as the flow of imported fertilizer and Mechanicus maintenance continues, yields can be kept stable even as the soil's natural fertility is totally destroyed. Eventually, inevitably, the land does fail, perhaps desertification from erosion or poisoned ground where nothing will grow, at which point the world might be quietly reclassified as a dead world or death world. But by then, the Imperium expects to have other agri-worlds brought online elsewhere to pick up the slack. To those in power, an agri-world is a tool to be driven hard until it breaks. There is no retirement for a planet. It either serves the Imperium's hunger or it is discarded. Human cogs in the farm machine. Amid this grand planetary-scale agricultural engine, what is life actually like for the human beings who work here? In many ways, it's akin to being a tiny insect caught in the gears of a colossal machine. The population of an agri-world is usually relatively low, perhaps a few hundred thousand people spread across an entire globe of fields. In some cases, it can reach into the low millions, but even at its most crowded, an agri-world's populace is sparse compared to the teeming billions of other world types. These worlds don't want large populations consuming food. Every stomach that must be fed locally is seen as a drain on exports. Instead, automation and servitors perform much of the brute labor. Legions of specially adapted servitors, lobotomized cyborg workers, grown in Mechanicus biovats, plod through the fields day and night, performing repetitive tasks tirelessly. These pitiful constructs till soil, pull harvest carts, cull pests, or do any other manual chore with uncomplaining efficiency. They feel no pain and require only occasional tech maintenance and fueling. Many are grotesquely modified, spine-stiffened servitors with scythe-like limbs that swing through grain fields like grim reapers, or stump-legged plodding units carrying tanks of herbicide to spray on weeds. Some are even staked in place as ever-vigilant mechanical scarecrows, their undead eyes and weapon implants deterring hungry local fauna or hungry workers from scavenging imperial crops. The human workforce, then, exists mainly to oversee and supplement the servitors and machines. They live in small settlements or work camps dotted across the continents, often prefabricated hab units clustered around a processing plant, shuttle pad, or water source. A single settlement might service hundreds of square kilometers of farmland. Workers are typically assigned to a district and might rarely travel beyond it. Their whole world might be the several thousand hectares of wheat or algae vats they tend. Each day they rise before the artificially scheduled dawn and labor until after the manufactured dusk, performing maintenance on harvester vehicles, repairing irrigation lines, calibrating weather control equipment, or doing the grueling hands-on tasks the servitors can't do well, like pruning fungus clumps or assisting difficult livestock births. It is backbreaking labor. Even with machines to do the heaviest part, the sheer scale of everything means the light work is endless. There is always another section of crop to inspect, another tank to reseed, another pen of animals to muck out or feed. Forget any romantic notions of a farmer whistling under the sun with a plow and oxen. On a typical agri-world, protective gear is as common as overalls. Workers often must wear filter masks or even full rad suits when out in the fields to avoid poisoning from chemicals or exposure to dangerous levels of UV if the atmospheric processors are malfunctioning. The weather itself, though controlled for the crop's sake, is not controlled for human comfort. Brutal midday heat might be scheduled simply because the grain needs it, leaving workers to bake under twin suns without respite. In other regions, endless wind howls across flat plains with no trees or hills to break it, blasting dust into every crack and crevice. Labor crews lean into these dust-laden gales, goggles on and heads down, trudging to their work sites like infantry marching into a storm. The noise can be overwhelming, too. Imagine colossal automated combines chugging and roaring across the land during harvest time, the drone of servitor engines at all hours, the whir of surveillance craft overhead. There is little tranquility on an agri-world. It is an outdoor factory that never truly sleeps. Most of the human workers are effectively owned by the administratum or the planetary governor. Many are indentured servants working off debts or fulfilling a tithe of labor from some other world. Others are the descendants of original colonists or previous generations of workers, born into a life where leaving is nearly impossible. Travel off-world is heavily restricted. Passage on the few shuttles is reserved for food exports or official business only. In essence, once you become an agri-world worker, you're stuck there, likely for life. The local saying, "You end up part of the soil," carries a grim double meaning. You die on this world, and perhaps your very body gets churned under the fields you worked. It's not far from the truth. Funerary practices on some agri-worlds involve composting the dead, returning any organic matter back into the earth to fertilize the next crop. After a lifetime of feeding the Imperium with your labor, in death you quite literally feed it with your remains. What do these people eat, one may wonder, surrounded by food as they are? Surely a world made of farms never lacks a meal. But the irony is that few agri-world laborers ever get to enjoy the bounty of their harvest. The vast majority of prime produce, the nutritious grain, the healthy livestock, the fresh water, is all earmarked for export. It's part of the imperial tithe and must be shipped off-world to feed others. The workers are given rations, of course, but often it's the lowest grade or damaged food. Grain that failed quality checks, bruised or vermin-eaten vegetables, stringy meat from an animal too sickly to ship out, or processed protein bars made from algae and synthetic additives. It keeps them alive, but just barely. Many agri-world field hands subsist on thin gruel and hard biscuits, even as they heft bushels of succulent crops destined for distant hive markets. It's a bitter reality. Standing in abundance yet suffering scarcity, stealing even a handful of grain or a few ears of corn for personal use is considered theft of imperial property and harshly punished if discovered. So the laborers chew their rough bread and turn the richest produce over to the freightlanders, watching nourishment depart the planet while their own children sometimes go hungry. The injustice isn't lost on them, but open complaints seldom get far. Discontent is a luxury for someone who isn't exhausted to the bone every night. The masters of the harvest. Overseeing this vast operation is typically a class of officials and enforcers. Every agri-world is formally ruled by a planetary governor, as is every planet in the Imperium, but the structure beneath that can vary. On some farm worlds, the governor is basically a feudal lord, and the planet is divided into estates run by noble families, These agri nobility might live in relative comfort, perhaps in a fortified manor or a small utopian city enclave that actually does enjoy some of the planet's produce. While peasant laborers break their backs in the fields, the noble landowners sample fine crops and succulent meats at decadent banquets, toasting the emperor for the prosperity their domain provides. Such aristocrats often view the common workers as akin to serfs, an inferior breed destined to live and die in the mud. They enforce order with private militias or enforcers and ensure the tithe is met so that their own standing with the Imperium remains favorable. Life for a noble on an agri world can be one of idle luxury amidst an engineered garden. But their numbers are few, a thin upper crust fattened by the exertions of thousands of others. On other agri worlds, especially those deemed too crucial to trust to mere nobles, the adeptus administratum may rule directly through appointed governors or bureaucratic councils. These worlds run more like giant state-owned farms. The managers are often career administratum officials, sometimes derogatorily called tithe counters, who focus on quotas, schedules, and efficiency above all. They sit in remote fortified agri complexes, monitoring data from across the planet. Rainfall timetables, growth rates, output tallies, storage levels. They issue orders to local work foremen by vox or encrypted slate, adjusting plans on the fly to squeeze out another percent of yield. Personal attachment to the land or people is discouraged. These overseers are trained to see the big picture, bushels per hectare, tons per week, rather than the human cost. If pushing the workforce 2 extra hours a day can meet the quota, it will be ordered. If a failing region can't keep up, perhaps its rations are cut to reduce waste of feeding unproductive mouths. This impersonal, bureaucratic rule can be even more callous than the feudal style. A feudal lord, cruel as he might be, at least knows the faces of the peasants he torments. A distant administratum prefect sees only numbers on a screen. In both cases, there is almost always an element of the Adeptus Mechanicus intimately involved. Agri worlds depend on technology to function. Weather controllers, harvesting engines, servitors, so Mechanicus tech priests are a power in their own right here. Often a chief magos of agriculture will command the Mechanicus contingent that maintains the machines and monitors the genetically modified crops. These tech priests stride in red robes through the fields, accompanied by clanking attendant robots, blessing the ancient harvest crawlers with sacred oils, or calibrating the nutrient levels in a vast hydroponic reservoir with mathematical devotion. To them, the agri world is essentially one giant biomechanical system, an engine of production dedicated to the Omniscia's glory and the Imperium's benefit as a side effect. The common workers might fear and revere the tech priests in equal measure. They rely on the tech priests to keep the seasons on track and the equipment running. But the priests often seem inhuman and aloof. It's not unheard of for Mechanicus overseers to conduct experimentality trials, testing new strains of Grox animal or experimental high-yield grain in secret plots of land without telling the local populace. A village might suddenly find its crop replaced by a strange new vine that oozes pungent sap, all because some magos wanted to see if variant XG13 will grow more efficiently. The people have no say. The Mechanicus's word on technological matters is law. Religious authority also plays a role. The ecclesiarchy maintains a presence to tend the spiritual well-being of the populace and to ensure their loyalty. Agri-world workers often turn to the imperial creed for solace, since they have little else. Small chapels or shrines dot the lands, where workers pray for a good harvest or give thanks, as they are told, to the god emperor for delivering them a chance to serve humanity. It is common to invoke the Emperor's protection over the fields. There are even imperial saints associated with agriculture, and local sects might venerate figures like Saint Amenitus, the Cedar, or Saint Bridger, the Reaper, semi-legendary figures said to have blessed fields or miraculously saved a harvest in ages past. In the evening after work, exhausted laborers may gather to sing hymns, requesting fair weather and protection from blight. The faith is one of the few comforts allowed. Your life is hard, yes, the priests admit, but it is the Emperor's work. To feed his people is a holy task. Your suffering is virtuous, your labor a living prayer. Such words help keep the workforce obedient, instilling in them a kind of grim pride that they are doing something sacred by farming, even if it kills them. It's a cruel bargain, of course. Piety does not ease their hunger or mend their broken bodies, but it does keep them docile enough to carry on one more day. Harvest of Giants. The pinnacle of each farming cycle is the harvest, and on an agri-world, this is an event of titanic proportion. When the grain fields are ripe or the herds fattened, the entire planet mobilizes to collect every last scrap of produce. This is when the great harvester machines are unleashed. Imagine a vehicle the size of a city block, a massive crawler with iron treads taller than a man. These combine harvesters, sometimes lovingly nicknamed harvester leviathans, have rested in enormous hangars or pens during the growing season. As harvest time begins, they are fired up with much clangor and smoke. A single Leviathan engine can consume hundreds of liters of promethium fuel an hour, and its heavy cutters and intake turbines roar like dragons waking from slumber. When they start rolling, the ground trembles. Dozens of these machines spread out across the flatlands, each one carving a swath through the crops several hundred meters wide. They suck in crops with industrial efficiency. Whole fields of wheat or millet disappear into their maw, stripped to barren stubble in moments as grain is threshed and funneled into internal storage. From a distance, one might mistake a harvester leviathan for some kind of strange war machine, crawling across the landscape with plumes of smoke and chaff aft drifting behind it. In truth, it is a kind of war, a war on hunger, as the Imperium would phrase it, waged with steel behemoths against the defenseless fields. Human crews ride inside these harvesters, usually a mix of tech priests, servitor operators, and a few lucky skilled workers, to monitor the process. It's hot, deafening, dangerous work. Any mechanical failure could mean an explosion or fire, and woe to anyone who falls from the crew gantries into the path of the machine. There's no stopping for an individual life. More than one unfortunate worker has been literally ground up with the grain, an unscheduled addition to the Emperor's cereal, one might say with grim humor. Indeed, those massive processing vats that the harvesters offload into will sterilize and sort the grain regardless, so a human body would simply be rendered into the mix without ceremony. It's often whispered among workers that every loaf of rations sent off-world contains a bit of long pig, human flesh from such accidents. It's a morbid joke, and possibly true. Once the harvesters have done their initial collection, fleets of automated shuttle landers descend from orbit to assist with the haul. You'll see them in the sky like a migration of metallic birds, dozens of carrier craft coming down. They dock directly with the giant harvesters out in the field or at central collection depots, loading up on raw foodstuff. On worlds with advanced facilities, the raw grain or meat goes into processor complexes the size of cities, where it's cleaned, treated with preservatives or antibiotics, and packaged. Giant vats and slurry processors churn constantly, turning grain into standardized protein paste, or pressing oils out of algae, or butchering and flash-freezing cuts of grox meat. The output is typically not recognizable as the nice fruits or cuts of meat one might find at a farmer's market. No, the final product of an agri-world is often a bland, durable foodstuff, made for mass consumption. Nutrient gruels, hard biscuit rations, tinned protein mash, or dried starch blocks, easily shipped with long shelf life, able to feed masses efficiently. Only a small portion of special produce, like rare delicacies or luxury foods, might be exported in its natural form for elite tables. The bulk is processed into what will become billions of ordinary ration packs distributed across the Imperium. After processing and packaging, cargo haulers bring the food up to orbit, where gigantic mass conveyor ships wait. These are some of the largest freighters in existence, capable of carrying megatons of cargo. They arrive in system on a schedule. Some agri worlds have a constant convoy system, with ships arriving monthly or quarterly to haul away the tithe. Once loaded, these ships translate into the warp and ferry the precious food to hive worlds, forge worlds, and war zones, completing the grand circuit of imperial logistics. It is a relentless flow. Sow, grow, harvest, export, like the heartbeat of the planet. There is no off-season, truly, because as soon as one harvest is done and the land refertilized, new seeds must go in and the cycle continues without rest. The work crews might get a brief respite of a day or two during a transition, but often even in those times they are busy cleaning equipment, repairing broken machinery, or expanding storage for the next yield. The agri-world knows no holiday. Nature's cycle has been weaponized into an unending assembly line. Varieties of agri-hell. While the stereotypical image is endless grain fields, agri-worlds are not all identical in what they produce, only in how thoroughly they are exploited. Many do indeed specialize in staple crops, hardy grains, tubers, or algae that can be turned into basic rations. But some worlds focus on livestock, great ranch plains where tough creatures like the reptilian groks are bred en masse. A grox is a foul-tempered, leathery hide beast with a high-protein flesh, often described as a mix between a bull and a lizard. They can eat almost anything and thrive in harsh conditions, making them ideal for mass meat production. On a grox farming world, one might see tens of thousands of these horned, scaly cattle penned in colossal enclosures, or being driven by mounted overseers across dusty prairies. The stench of their manure and the bellowing of herds can be overpowering. At slaughter time, automated abattoirs process them in a conveyor of gore that few humans could stomach to watch. But the end result is dried grox jerky and protein strips that will feed Imperial Guard soldiers on distant fronts. The ranchers who wrangle grox must be hardy and a bit mad, as groks are known to attack and eat unwary caretakers. Being mauled or trampled is an occupational hazard, but as the saying goes, better to be eaten by a groks than eaten by your commander for missing a shipment. Other agri-worlds might cultivate oceans rather than land. There are worlds covered mostly in water that teem with edible fish or krill. These planets become essentially ocean farms, flotillas of factory ships skimming nutrient-rich seas, harvesting billions of tons of plankton or algae, or netting massive schools of fish raised in orbital pens and then released for capture. Picture entire equatorial belts of ocean turned green with algae, blooms deliberately seeded to grow, tended by teams of divers and submersible servitors. The algae is then sucked up into processing ships and dried into nutrient flakes. On some worlds, genetically engineered fish are bred in pens the size of lakes, fed with imported feed. And then, at maturity, the pens are opened and trawler ships sweep the area to haul in the crop. The scale defies imagination. An entire planet's aquatic biosphere treated as one big fish farm. As with land crops, pollution is rampant. The water is often laced with chemicals to spur growth or control microorganisms, leading to toxic red tides and dead zones in the ocean, where nothing is left alive after over-harvesting. There are even stranger agri-world variants. A few planets are covered in vast fungal forests, deliberately cultivated giant mushrooms and lichen mats that can be processed into food or medicines. In perpetual dank caverns or humid plains, these fungus fields are tended by spore-masked workers who hack off meter-long fungal fronds as though logging timber, piling the pallid fungus flesh into loaders. Other worlds seed their atmosphere with swarms of nutritious insects. Yes, insect farming on a planetary scale. Clouds of plump, protein-rich arthropods flit through the skies or crawl through crops, devouring waste and reproducing rapidly, until harvesters, perhaps using enormous vacuum devices or baited traps, gather them by the ton. It's not pretty. Envision great black drifts of skittering bugs being sucked into silos. But insects can be ground into paste that is very nutritive and can even be formed into a sort of protein loaf for human consumption. There are gas giant worlds where platforms float in the endless sky, herding flocks of giant aerial jellyfish or plankton-eating skyfish that produce edible eggs or meat collected by daring balloon ship crews. If it can be eaten by humans or converted into something humans can eat, the Imperium will find a world to farm it. No environment is too extreme, only the method changes. Yet, no matter the crop or creature, the life of those who do the farming is uniformly harsh. Whether a man is skimming algae from a toxic vat, mucking out grox pens under twin suns, or pruning bioluminescent fungus in a dark cave, his toil is endless and his reward meager. The details differ. One may die from drowning in a slurry tank, another from a grox bite infection, another from fungal spore lung. But the overall fate is the same. These worlds grind down those who work them, one harvest at a time. Communities and culture. One might wonder what kind of society forms under such conditions. Spread out over huge distances, lacking large cities, how do agri-worlders socialize or find any joy? The truth is, community life is very small and insular. A typical social unit might be a village of a few dozen families stationed around a key facility, like a water pump station or grain silo. These families often have worked the same lands for generations if the world has been around that long. They develop tight bonds. They have to rely on each other to survive. You'll see cooperative efforts in daily life, communal cook fires where thin soups are shared, everyone contributing a scrap, labor crews rotating through each other's fields to tackle one area at a time, collective maintenance days where the whole village turns out to repair a broken harvester because if they don't, none of them eat. There is pride in their work, twisted though it is by the Imperium's demands. A farm clan might take fierce pride that their district met 100% of its yield quota 5 years running. They have nothing else to boast of, so that achievement becomes their identity. They might paint crude honor marks on their hab walls to celebrate a successful season, or a banner in the sparse chapel thanking the Emperor for the bounty of Section 7G Delta, their home plot. Education is minimal beyond what is needed to tend the crops and recite the proper prayers. Most agri-world children learn to walk behind a plow or program a servitor by adolescence. Literacy is not widespread except among the overseer classes. Practical knowledge like machinery repair, survival skills, and the Imperial Creed are prioritized. Superstition fills the gaps of understanding. Many farm folk develop a kind of mysticism about the land, half religious, half folklore. They might believe the spirit of the emperor literally lives in the soil, watching to see if they toil diligently, or that the machine spirits of the harvesters will become angry if not given a daily blessing of sacred machine oil. Given the precariousness of their existence, it's no surprise they seek spiritual meaning. Some communities go as far as forming agrarian cults, minor deviations of the imperial creed that focus entirely on the act of farming. To outsiders, it might look like heresy or silly superstition, farmers in rough-hewn robes dancing in the fields at midnight under a full moon, chanting for rain, a sect that refuses to eat anything but a certain type of bean because they believe it's blessed. Or an entire clan that ritually scars their foreheads with the symbol of a plowshare to show their devotion to the emperor as farmer. The ecclesiarchy usually tolerates these eccentricities as long as they don't diminish production or slip into outright heretical belief. But occasionally a fiery confessor priest might declare some local custom blasphemous and crack down, adding another layer of fear to the people's lives, fear of damnation on top of fear of starvation. Entertainment and leisure are scant, perhaps on a rest day. A village might gather for a simple festival, essentially the kind of harvest home or planting celebration agrarian people have held since ancient times. But on an imperial agri world, these events are tinged with desperation and duty. A harvest festival might consist of solemnly thanking the god emperor for allowing them to meet the quota, coupled with remembering those who died during the season. If there's music, it's often repurposed hymns. If there's feasting, it uses up the odd surplus that couldn't be shipped, like that one malformed calf nobody wanted, now roasted to share. Laughter is a rare sound. More often, these gatherings end in exhausted people falling asleep in the communal yard, knowing that tomorrow the grind begins anew, carried on the backs of the downtrodden. It must be said plainly, the common agri-worlder lives a life of unending servitude and hardship. There is no upward mobility, no real wealth to be had. In many cases, the planetary rulers ensure the populace remains in a state of near-feudal dependence. They might be paid in scrip, local currency only good at the company store, or not paid at all beyond room and board. They have quotas to meet and often backbreaking daily targets. If a region consistently falls short, the overseers might impose punishments, reduced rations, public floggings of the headman, or even executions for laziness or sabotage. The fear of imperial retribution if they fail their duty looms large. It's well known that if an agri-world's output falters without a very good reason, like an external invasion or unavoidable blight, the planet's governor will face severe inquiry. That pressure flows downhill. The governor threatens the district magistrates, the magistrates threaten the village headmen, and the headmen drive the workers relentlessly. Everyone is terrified of being the one blamed for a shortfall. And indeed, if an agri-world were to rebel or shirk its duty, the response would be harsh. The administratum might send a special arbitrator to investigate, humorlessly referred to in lore as something like the scrutators of quantity, officials tasked with auditing production. These agents arrive with full authority to implement corrections. They could nationalize noble estates, execute managers deemed incompetent, or, in extreme cases, call in the Adeptus Arbites, or even the Astra Militarum to enforce order. There have been dark incidents where underperforming farming communities were made examples of. For instance, an entire village publicly executed and ground into fertilizer as a warning to the rest that quotas will be met, one way or another. The Imperium's cruelty truly has no bottom when it comes to enforcing compliance. One might think, then, that rebellion must simmer in the hearts of these oppressed workers. Indeed, agri-worlds can be fertile ground, pardon the phrase, for dissent. But it usually manifests not as open revolt, which would be suicidal given the lack of weapons and the presence of imperial oversight, but as more subtle resistance or tragic escapism. For instance, there are cases of workers turning to forbidden cults. Genestealer cults in particular find footholds in such desperate populations. Imagine offering an exhausted, hungry farmer the promise of a new god that will free them from imperial tyranny and fill their belly in the form of a cult that literally promises a family, belonging, and eventual deliverance, albeit deliverance via Xenos consumption, but they don't advertise that part. Genestealer infection can spread quietly through isolated farmsteads, forming secret networks that one day rise up and sabotage the world's infrastructure to pave the way for the Tyranids. The Imperium has discovered more than one agri-world that abruptly went silent, only to find its granaries empty and its people vanished or turned mutant, heralding a Tyranid hive fleet's approach. Chaos, too, can take root in the discontented soil of these worlds. Where Imperial creed is strong, open chaos worship is rarer, but the seed of frustration and despair can lead a farmer to strike a Faustian bargain. There are stories, possibly apocryphal, but chilling, of a farmer praying desperately not to lose his crops to a blight, and a different power answering. Perhaps Nurgle, the plague god, whispering a way to make the crops grow immune to disease at the small price of a spreading rot elsewhere. Or a Slaaneshi cult forming among a group of youths who have known nothing but deprivation, luring them with promises of any pleasure at all in exchange for their devotion. These things may start in back barns or remote groves, but can end with an entire community going mad, slaughtering their overseers, and dancing under a blood-red moon among burning fields. The ruinous powers find any crack in the Imperial facade, and agri-worlds, though simple, have cracks aplenty in the form of suffering souls. Even without outright heresy, simple rebellion against the planetary authorities can occur if conditions worsen beyond endurance. One bad drought, despite weather control, sometimes systems fail. One pest outbreak. And if the response is mishandled, starvation can hit the local population quickly, because so little is kept for them. Hungry, desperate people might decide they've had enough of shipping everything off-world while their children die. There have been a few noted incidents of agri-world food riots. Mobs of workers seizing granaries or attacking shuttles to grab food for themselves. Typically, these are put down brutally by armed response teams or PDF, Planetary Defense Forces, if the world has them. But occasionally they escalate into wider revolts. In such cases, the Imperium's answer is often to send in a regiment of the Astra Militarum or the Adeptus Arbites to crush the rebellion. Agri-worlds have strategic value, and Terra would rather bomb a rebellious farm continent to ash and hope to reseed it later than lose it entirely to secession. It's grim to note, but the same regiments that the planet's grain once fed might be deployed to gun down those who grew it, all in the name of Imperial order. Threats from beyond. Aside from internal strife, agri-worlds face all the dangers of the galaxy, arguably more, since they often lack strong defenses. To enemies of the Imperium, a rich, undefended food supply is a tantalizing target. Orcs, for example, have been known to invade agri-worlds not just for a fight, though they love that too, but for looting supplies. An entire planet of things that can be eaten or repurposed for squig feed. A war boss can feed his war for a good while with those spoils. Orcs also delight in the sheer vandalism of burning great fields and slaughtering livestock. It's destruction and mayhem, their favorite pastime. The locals, with only a token planetary defense force, often just lightly armed volunteers or a few undertrained infantry companies, are usually overrun quickly by a determined orc assault. Resistance might consist of farmers forming bucket brigades and makeshift militia, perhaps using hunting rifles or work tools against axe-wielding green brutes. The outcome is rarely in doubt. It's carnage. And with each agri-world that falls, millions on other planets face starvation until alternate supplies are arranged, Drukhari, Dark Eldar, raiders also see soft targets in Agri worlds. They know such planets have minimal military presence, and their populations, though small, are spread out and vulnerable. Lightning-fast slave raids will descend, jetbike-riding raiders and skimmer craft coming out of a dark night sky to hit isolated villages. The Drukhari seek living captives for torture and slaves, and rural folk make easy pickings. Many a quiet farmstead has abruptly become a slaughterhouse as cackling Xenos drag shrieking farmers into the skies. In some cases, the raiders also take samples of exotic beasts or plants, either out of curiosity or to deprive the Imperium of them. The aftermath of these raids is traumatizing. Communities wiped out in a single hour, with maybe one half-crazed survivor left hiding in a silo. And the planet must then carry on, delivering its tithe, with fewer hands and a terrified remaining populace who know the monsters from the stars might come again whenever they please. And the planet must then carry on, delivering its tithe, with fewer hands and a terrified remaining populace who know the monsters from the stars might come again whenever they please. The Tyranids, as mentioned before, are perhaps the ultimate doom for any Agri world they reach. A planet rich in biomass, essentially covered in food and living things, is exactly what the Tyranid Hive Fleets target to replenish themselves. If a tendril of Hive Fleet finds an Agri world, it's like a shark smelling blood in water. Genestealer cults might have paved the way, or the Hive may just descend unannounced. Either way, the end is often inevitable unless the Imperium can mount a major defense. The Tyranids will consume everything, crops, livestock, wildlife, and people. Those neat fields will be churned into muck by a carpet of chitinous bodies and feeder organisms. Within weeks, an Agri world can be reduced to a stripped rock, its carefully terraformed environment sucked dry of all organic material. For the Imperium, losing a breadbasket world to the Tyranids is a grave blow, not just strategically, but symbolically, since it turns the act of nourishment into an act of devouring. A world that once fed millions now feeds a Xenos swarm. Thus, if an Adeptus Astartes chapter or Imperial Navy fleet is nearby when Tyranids threaten an Agri world, they will often attempt a defense, not out of love for the peasants, but for the practical need to preserve the food source. There are stirring tales, propagated by the Imperium, of brave regiments and space marines fighting desperate battles amid burning wheat fields or on the decks of floating aqua farms, holding the line against Tyranid organisms until reinforcement arrived. Though these heroics do occur, more often the official policy if a world cannot be saved is scorched earth. Better to virus bomb the planet and deny the Tyranids a meal, thus also denying everyone that food supply, than to allow the Hive Fleet to gain strength from it. It's always about the calculus of larger war, never about the people. Defending the harvest. Given these threats, one might wonder what defenses an Agri world has. The sad fact is, most have very limited military forces on planet. A typical Agri world's planetary defense force, PDF, is small, perhaps a few garrison units stationed near key facilities like spaceports, major granaries, or the governor's residence. They may have a handful of anti-air guns to deter pirate raids, maybe a short-range orbital defense laser or missile battery, often old and poorly maintained, intended to scare off a single raider ship at best. These forces are often undertrained and under-equipped. The Imperium does not prioritize giving its best tanks or veteran troops to a farm world. The local soldiers might even be part-time militia drawn from the farming population, who can hardly be spared from their labor. They do what they can, for example, confronting pirates or smugglers who attempt to steal shipments, or quelling small uprisings and occasionally responding to creatures that wander in, like a pack of native predators that somehow survived, or a swarm of pests that needs firepower to cull. But in a full-scale invasion, the PDF will crumple quickly without outside aid. Sometimes the Imperial Guard will raise regiments from agri-world populations, especially if a war front nearby needs manpower. Historically, notable regiments like the Savlar Chemdogs, though from a penal world, or certain cavalry units have had agrarian roots. Agri-worlders tend to make hardy light infantry. They are used to hardship, long marches, and living off the land, what little the land gives. If mounted units are needed, those few who handle livestock, like riders who herd groks or horses on more primitive agri-worlds, can be formed into cavalry. In dire times, the tithe of an agri-world might temporarily switch from food to manpower, conscripting farmers into the guard. This, however, can be catastrophic for the world's output if not carefully balanced. You can't take too many hands away from the fields without risking a poor harvest. So, typically, agri-world guard regiments are only tithed from worlds with surplus labor or during all-out crusade mustering. Once those troops depart, the ones left behind must shoulder even more work. In the grim wisdom of the Imperium, sometimes a world must starve a little now, lose workers to war, to ensure others don't starve later. Intrigue and sabotage. One might assume agri-worlds, being about farming, are politically quiet backwaters. Often that's true, but there are instances of intrigue that would surprise an outside observer. Rivalries can form between different estates, or between the governor and the mechanicus, or administratum. There have been known cases of sabotage born of greed or fear. For example, an ambitious administratum official on one world might secretly try to spoil a neighbor world's harvest via poisoning crops or introducing pests to make his own output look superior and gain favor. Or a planetary governor might, out of spite or local dispute, arrange an accident that destroys a major granary belonging to a political rival's district, then blame it on bandits or Xenos raiders. These Machiavellian schemes are dangerous. Tampering with food supply verges on heresy in the Imperium's eyes, but the internal politics of feudal lords or corrupt officials can lead to such treachery. The common folk, of course, suffer the consequences. A blight here or a mysterious silo explosion there can mean famine on the local level, with nobody the wiser that it was deliberate. Corruption also creeps in via the temptation of black market trade. A certain percentage of produce might vanish before the tithe count, sold off by crooked overseers to smugglers or rogue traders for personal profit. Luxury foods in particular. A crate of sweet ale from a world that mostly ships bland gruel, or a bushel of fresh tropical fruit from a paradise climate farm. These can fetch fortunes on the side. Such theft is risky. If an imperial audit notices missing amounts, heads will literally roll. But greed in the 41st millennium is as eternal as hunger, and some officials gamble they can hide their skimming. Where there's black market dealing, there may even be off-world criminal syndicates involved, possibly even underworld elements from hive cities looking to secure alternative food sources or rare delicacies. This injects a dose of crime drama into an otherwise bucolic setting. Secret meetings at night out in the fields between a farm factor and a void ship captain, exchanging chests of grain for chests of weapons or contraband. Again, if discovered, the retribution is severe, but the very existence of these dealings underscores that an agri-world is not peaceful. It's just a different kind of battlefield. The weight of the tithe. Always, life on an agri-world circles back to that one overarching imperative, the tithe. Every year, or whatever local cycle measurement applies, the planet owes a certain amount of food to the Imperium. This tithe grade can vary. Some worlds are classed exactus prima, meaning a truly massive output, while others might be a bit lower. but high or low, it is typically an exacting demand. The administratum calculates the tithe based on the perceived capacity of the world, often with no allowance for bad years. If weather controllers fail or a blight hits, the numbers on the ledger don't budge. The expectation is the shortfall will be made up somehow. And if it's not? It's not just the governor in trouble. The Imperium might reduce rations on a hive world to account for the missing shipments, causing millions to starve or riot there. So the pressure to meet the quota is immense. This is why the local authorities will work people to death rather than miss the numbers. In their cold view, better to sacrifice thousands of peasants or strip the land bare than to face an angry sector governor demanding to know why the Forge World's workers are going hungry. One must understand that in the Imperial bureaucracy, humans are replaceable. But lost food can mean lost wars. If a major crusade is fighting and suddenly their supply of rations from a particular agri-world dries up, soldiers at the front might falter. Thus, the lives of the agri-laborers weigh very little against the grand game of regiments and fleets. The people toiling on the farm planet know nothing of this grand calculus. They only know that if they fail to hit the arbitrary numbers, they might all be punished or even executed. It's a dreadful sword dangling above them. Some communities thus overwork themselves voluntarily, pushing to deliver more than required as a buffer. This can backfire, as the administratum might then increase the expected tithe next time. Ah, you produced 105% of quota this year. Splendid, clearly we can count on you for 105% again. There is no winning, only a grim dance of endurance. No safer haven. One recurring conversation among Imperial citizens is the question, where is the best place to live in the Imperium? Many imagine an agri world might be a safe bet, far from the wars, out in the peaceful countryside. Indeed, agri worlds are often not on the front lines of conflicts, and a worker might live years without seeing a single enemy soldier or a citywide disaster like those that plague hive worlds. But as we have seen, peaceful doesn't equal pleasant. Agri world life is its own kind of hell. A slow, grinding, subtle hell that wears you away with labor, privation, and hopelessness. There is little glory, little variation, and death by overwork or industrial accident is as real a threat as a bolter round or hive riot elsewhere. One might say it's the difference between a quick death by violence and a slow death by toil. For those few who are privileged, the aforementioned nobles, tech priests, or administrators, an agri-world can indeed be a comfortable posting. They get to breathe cleaner air from their rebreathers inside climate-controlled habs than a hive noble would, and they enjoy the finest food straight from the source. A wealthy lord on an agri-world might have orchards of exotic fruits reserved just for his household, or cellars of exquisite wine made from grapes that never make it into tithe. Ironically, while the common folk starve, the elite may enjoy a gourmet lifestyle. In some cases, agri-world nobles even develop a taste for their own product line, literally. For example, a cattle baron dining nightly on prime grox, steaks the size of platters, or a sugar plantation heiress living in a palace made of rare wood and consuming candy confections while her indentured laborers subsist on nutrient paste. To those few, the agri-world might indeed seem like the pastoral paradise promised in the propaganda, because for them it is. They have carved out a private Eden at the center of a carefully engineered hell for everyone else. This class divide can breed resentment, naturally, but usually the powerful are an ocean away from the masses, figuratively or literally. They might live on another continent entirely, separated by distance and armed guards, or in floating cities or orbital stations from which they oversee the planet. The average field hand will never lay eyes on the governor's mansion, except perhaps as a distant silhouette on a hill or an image on a cogitator screen during a mandated broadcast. It's easy for the rulers to pretend all is well when their immediate surroundings are lush and orderly. Many choose to believe their own propaganda, that the workers are content in their simple lives and that tales of hardship are exaggerated. If a serf dies in the field out of the governor's sight, did it truly happen? The grain keeps flowing, so all must be fine. This willful ignorance is common among imperial nobility in all sectors, and agri-world nobles are no exception. Unsung and expendable, the final tragic truth behind life on an agri-world is how utterly unappreciated and expendable these lives are to the wider Imperium. Hive city populations do not know or care which world their daily bowl of corpse starch gruel came from, nor what suffering produced it. Forge world artisans forging tanks and shells scarcely pause to think about the flour in their ration bread. It's just fuel to keep working. Imperial propaganda might occasionally mention the noble farmers who feed us all, but it's lip service. In day-to-day reality, these farm workers are invisible. If an entire agri-world vanished tomorrow, most of the Imperium would only notice when their bellies rumbled a month later, and even then they would curse the administratum for failing them, rather than mourn the unknown farmers who presumably died. The Imperium's attitude is perhaps summarized by a callous maxim, an administratum clerk once etched in a memo. Food grows, farmers die. There are always more starving souls in the galaxy that can be dumped onto a new planet to start the cycle anew if one population should be expended. There is always another frontier planet that can be transformed into a replacement breadbasket if an old one fails. In the grand scale of 10,000 years of Imperial history, thousands of agri-worlds have likely been exhausted or lost, but humanity endures, fed by the next world and the next. It's a strategy of constant consumption, treating planets and people as disposable fuel. A final harvest of truth. Now the camera pulls back from the close-up details. We see again the wide shot of fields under that orange, chemical-tainted sky. But now we know what's behind the thin veneer of pastoral beauty. We see bent figures in the distance, stooped under heavy loads, trudging through the rows of crops while automata clank and drones buzz overhead. A child, barely in their teens, struggles to drag a basket half her size filled with mutant tubers, while an overseer barks at her to move faster or feel the shock prod. In the far background, a gigantic harvester machine creeps forward relentlessly, silhouetted by the setting sun, consuming everything in its path. This is life on an agri-world, the quiet horror that underpins the Imperial realm. Every meal enjoyed on a hive world, every protein bar that keeps a guardsman fighting, every calorie that fuels the Imperium's uncountable billions has a cost. That cost is paid in sweat and blood by the faceless masses on agri-worlds. The farmer whose lungs are scarred by fertilizer fumes. The mechanized harvester crew who haven't seen a day of rest in months. The child who will never know a life without hunger, even as they stand knee-deep in food. These people live and die in service to a distant Imperium that will never thank them. Their only reward is the knowledge, imposed by dogma, that this is the Emperor's will and the natural order of things. At the end of our journey, we must confront this irony. The worlds that give life to the Imperium are themselves stripped of life and hope. The next time we marvel at the sheer scale of humanity's armies or cities, we should also spare a thought for these bleak farm planets laboring in the background unseen. They are the foundation upon which the Imperium's might is built, and like any foundation, they are buried under the edifice, in darkness and pressure, bearing weight so that others may stand tall. Conclusion: In the Imperium of Man, no life is easy, no world truly untouched by horror. The Agri worlds may not have the obvious terrors of a battlefield or the grotesque madness of a chaos-infested hive, but they harbor a more subtle cruelty. It's the cruelty of a system that grinds human lives as casually as millstones grinding wheat. It's the monstrous truth behind each loaf of bread and each bowl of ration gruel, a truth written in the calloused hands and unmarked graves of farmers on distant, forgotten worlds. This has been Life on an Agri World, the horrifying truth behind the Imperium's farms. And indeed, in this vast galaxy of cruelty, even the simple act of growing food carries a price in pain and blood. The next time you taste the bitterness of your daily ration, remember the taste of these fields. The bitterness is one and the same. In the grim darkness of the far future, life itself is the tithe that must be paid, and on the Agri worlds, they pay it in full, season after season, until there is nothing left.